His brother Jerry Leslie, his subject, After Death, the Judgment. After Death, the Judgment. Brother Duran. Our brother Leslie, excuse me.
We are also very happy that you are your fellowship at this convention. We want to look at the covenants this morning, particularly the grace and the new covenants, and how they relate to either the Abrahamic or the law covenants. Among other points, these are some of the points that we want to examine from the scriptures. First, that the new covenant is a term covering the world's future justification, and that the church's covenant of grace is something quite different. Secondly, that the church will be a part of the mediator. Thirdly, that the blood of the church seals the new covenant. Fourth, that and fifth, that the new covenant is nationalistic. These are not new thoughts, but it seems important to know why we believe these things. These positions are largely based on the book of Hebrews, and particularly passages found in the 8th and 9th chapters. So let us turn to that book, and let us look first of all, however, to the background and structure of the book of Hebrews as a whole. First, it was addressed to the Jews at Jerusalem, those that were studied in the scriptures and in their interpretation. Next, Paul looks at the duty of Moses as mediator of their law covenant, but the need for a better mediator and covenant, even as promised by Jeremiah. He then shows that Melchizedek was a higher type, that Jesus is introduced then as a mediator of the new covenant based on better promises. He proposes that if the old covenant was promised to be replaced by a new covenant, then it was futile to trust in the old. And he asks them to consider Jesus, who died for the implementation of two salvations. So do not refuse him, but follow him without the camp, as did the goat the bullock. This is a sketchy overview of the background of Hebrews. Now let us turn to the 8th chapter, verses 1 and 2. Now, of the things which we have spoken, this is the sum. We have such an high priest who is set on the right hand of the throne of the majesty in heavens, a minister of the sanctuary and of the true tabernacle which the Lord pitched and not man. This is the sum. This is the principal matter. This is the chief point. Having finished his explanation of the type in Melchizedek, he now begins to plainly discuss the superiority of Christ's priesthood to the Levitical. After having completed his sacrifice, Christ sitting in heaven performs his office of priest. This is his point in chapter 10, verse 12. And also chapter 12, verse 2. He now ministers in the true tabernacle, the heavenly courts. Let us continue with verses 3 through 5. For every high priest is ordained to offer gifts and sacrifices, wherefore it is of necessity that this man have somewhat to offer. For if he were on earth, he should not be a priest, seeing that there are priests that offer gifts according to the law, who serve unto the example and show and shadow of heavenly things, as Moses was admonished of God when he was about to make the tabernacle. For see, saith he, that thou makest all things according to the pattern shown thee on the mount. Every priest is ordained to make offerings and sacrifices. Christ is appointed for this special work in the heavens. There is an atoning work to do there. If Christ remained on earth, he could not have performed the office of priest. Being of the tribe of Judah, only the Levites were appointed to serve the law as types and shadows of heavenly things. But there is a second reason he would not be a priest if he had remained on earth. Until the earthly was sacrificed, he had not somewhat to offer. His sacrifice was completed at Calvary, and henceforth, as the resurrected high priest, he had there human life rights to offer as he saw the divine will. Verses 6 and 7 from the Revised Standard reads, "But as it is, Christ has obtained a ministry which is as much more excellent than the old as the covenant he mediates is better, since it is enacted on better promises. For if that first covenant had been faultless, there would have been no occasion for a second." As Melchizedek was a higher picture of the realm of responsibility than the Levitical priesthood, so this more excellent ministry, this ministration, refers to all the duties performed by this better priest, whether enacted now or in the future. Yet we believe the title and duties have been earned and received. But here in verse 7, he emphasizes the contrast in order to wean away the Jewish dependence upon the law covenant for their salvation. The reason that Paul does this, we think, is not to tell them that they should now abide under the new covenant, but in that God was promising a new covenant, they should understand that the old was not sufficient for all times. It was not proposed to anticipate all needs. Verses 8 through 12. "For finding fault with them, he saith, Behold, the days cometh, saith the Lord, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, because they continued not in my covenant, I regarded them not, saith the Lord. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I will put my laws into their mind and write them in their hearts. And I will be to them a God, and they shall be to me a people. And they shall not teach every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, Know the Lord. For all shall know me from the least to the greatest. For I will be merciful to their unrighteousness, and their sins and iniquities will I remember no more." The them of verse 8 is all Israel under the law covenant. The Jewish people having broken that covenant, there was no further provision under that covenant than condemnation. Therefore, Paul quotes from Jeremiah 31 that a new covenant will be established. Rotherham, in commenting on these texts, says, "We are struck by the statement that the new covenant rests upon better promises than did the old. It at once becomes obvious as we glance at the terms of the new covenant promised by Jeremiah, and then recall the conditional basis of the old covenant, If ye will indeed hearken to my voice and keep my commandments, then shall ye be mine as a treasure beyond all peoples." Such was the original overture to Israel. The old covenant was based on a conditional promise, if. But how serious an if was that? End of quote. The new covenant basically is a replacement for the old. For the old has conditions and laws, and so does the new. But it will then be written upon the heart, not upon stone. It will also be based on works, Jeremiah 32, verse 19, and Revelation 22, 12. Though these verses don't say new covenant, I think the context justifies our applying it to those conditions and time frame. But the superior nature of the covenant will be the better mediator, who will not only interact between estranged parties, but enable them to meet the conditions. This is something that Moses did not have within his capacity. The blessings of the new covenant are future kingdom blessings. They are when all shall know him. The "after those days" phrase, we think, refers to all the days intervening between the Exodus and the Gospel Age work. Paul identifies the covenant after both of these ages, chapter 10, 14 through 16, Hebrews 10, 14 through 16. That is, after the days of sanctifying the church, found in verse 14. This "after" seems closely related to the "until" of Romans 11, 25 through 28. Until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. And also with Acts 15, 14 through 16. First visiting the Gentiles to take out a people for his name. After this, the rebuilding of the tabernacle of David. Hebrews 8:13. In that he saith a new covenant, he hath made the first old. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. His argument is that if a determination is made for a new covenant to replace the old is due or destined to pass away. He is not reasoning that it had already passed away. For if the provision of grace under which the church abides were being referred to here as the new covenant, this would have already replaced the old at the appearing before God for us and at Pentecost, not about to pass away at the time of this writing to the Hebrews. When in Hebrews 7:22, we are told that Jesus was made the surety of a better covenant, the surety does not mean the operation of that covenant. Paul's meaning is as in chapter 2, 8 and 9. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet, for in that he hath put in subjection under him, he left nothing that is put under him. But now we see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honor, that he by the grace of God should taste death for every man. We see here the principle of the laying of the foundation guarantees the completion of the structure. The appearing of the sacrifice guarantees the fruitage of that sacrifice. We come now to Hebrews, the 9th chapter. Verse 1. Paul here says that the ordinances and tabernacle sanctuary are typical. In verses 2 through 5, he reviews the sanctuary furniture. For the sake of our time, we will pass over a detailed examination of these. In chapter 9, verses 6 and 7, he here reviews the priestly jurisdiction. The interesting point he draws to the attention of the Hebrew brethren is that the priests had daily and ready access to the first, the holy only of the tabernacle. But once a year on the Day of Atonement, the high priest went alone into the second, the most holy, with blood. He even referred to, Paul refers to here, the two entries on that day. First, with the blood of the bullock on behalf of himself, that is his house. Then with the blood of the goat for the people. Verses 8 through 10. The Holy Spirit, this signifying that the way into the holiest of all was not yet manifest, while as the first tabernacle was yet standing, which was a figure for the time then present, in which were offered both gifts and sacrifices that could not make him that did the service perfect as pertaining to the conscience, which stood only in the meats and drinks and divers washings and carnal ordinances imposed on them until the time of Reformation. Paul's words in verse 8 might well be understood to mean, while the ordinances of the original tabernacle are regarded as having a standing or jurisdiction, the way into the antitypical most holy is obscured. This application can only be realized by acknowledging the import of the entry of the antitypical high priest on our behalf. Verses 9 and 10 essentially say that as long as the figures of the true alone were regarded, as the type was only regarded, these could not take away guilt from the mind nor purify the consciousness of dead works under the law. For they are only typical of the true offerings, consecration and justification. Nevertheless, these ordinances and ceremonies were imposed only until the time of the gospel age opportunities for reformation, rectification, when the substance is put for the shadow and the enlightenment of verses 11 through 14 are apparent. Verses 11 through 14. But Christ being come and high priest of good things to come, by a higher and more perfect tabernacle, not made with hands, that is to say, not of this building, neither by the blood of goats and calves, but by his own blood, he entered in once into the holy place, having obtained eternal redemption for us. For if the blood of bulls and goats and ashes of an heifer sprinkling the unclean sanctify us to the purifying of the flesh, how much more shall the blood of Christ, who through the eternal Spirit offered himself without spot to God, purge your conscience from dead works to serve the living God. Here Paul turns to Christ and the heavenly administration as the greater priest and the greater tabernacle. In verse 11, he refers to the good things to come. The Revised Version refers to it as the good things, refers to the good things to come as the good things that have come. The present privileges of the saints are also secured by Christ's sacrifice and entering into heaven, the greater tabernacle on our behalf. The Revised Version renders verse 11, when Christ appeared as high priest. Later in verse 24 and 26, the word appear occurs in relationship to the us class. This appearing occurs with the entry of the high priest with the bullock's blood. He does this in figure in order to guarantee the acceptableness of the blood of the goat, also used as part of the sin offering. The bullock's blood was for his house, the goat for the other 11 tribes. But in this process, it is obvious that the bullock's blood is sufficient for all, if it guaranteed the goat. As John says in 1 John 2, verse 2, he is the propitiation for our sins, and not only for ours only, but also for the sins of the whole world. It is this lofty work that Paul refers to in verse 12, when he entered once for all for the securing of eternal redemption. The idea of the ransom merit being sufficient for all time is central to Paul's teaching that the law covenant was inadequate. In verses 13 and 14, he posed the application directly to the Hebrew brethren. If those sacrifices were only used to purify the ceremonial impurity of verse 10, then you should trust more in the greater blood to purge the conscience of all your dead works under the law that it could not address. Now we come to verse 15. And for this cause he is the mediator of the New Testament, which by means of death for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the first testament, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance. The question arises, is the phrase "for this cause" an extension of the cause of verse 14, namely the sanctifying work for the church, or for some other cause? In one sense, the church's covenant might be considered new in contrast and an alternative to the old law covenant. But is this what Paul meant? We think not. The new covenant is a replacement for the law covenant to accomplish what it could not, to make the comers thereunto perfect. Hebrews 10:1. Paul in Galatians 3 makes a point to show that our covenant is not new. In fact, it is older than the law covenant. Galatians 3:16 and 17. Galatians 3:16. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. He saith not, and to seeds as of many, but as of one, and to thy seed which is Christ. And this I say, that the covenant which was confirmed before of God in Christ, the law which was 430 years after, cannot disannul, that it should make the promise of none effect. He's referring to the original covenant with Abraham, that the law covenant could not disannul this major all-encompassing covenant. And of course, verse 29, and if ye be Christ, then are ye Abraham's seed and heirs according to the promise. That promise, the original, the older covenant than the law covenant. That is also Paul's argument in Galatians 4. To show that we are children of the Abrahamic covenant through the Sarah picture. The law was added after that, but Sarah bears her fruitage after the children of the law covenant. It does not disannul the fact that the promise was through her originally and first. Therefore, Paul, in Hebrews 6:13 through 20, shows that our hope is based on the older original covenant. The new covenant is designed to replace Israel's law covenant with broader and more expansive results. Besides, our covenant is one of sacrifice, Psalms 50 verse 5 and Romans 12 verse 1. In fact, it consists of the sacrifices to secure the new covenant. We know of nowhere that the new covenant calls for sacrifice. So, verse 14 is a subordinate explanation of one of the uses of the blood, namely sanctification of the church. And verse 15 is another. The subject is the blood and its uses. He is not the mediator of the new covenant for the purpose of our sanctification, but for the reason of verse 12, that the blood is sufficient for all. Therefore, he is appointed to the office which can deliver the benefits of the covenant he delineated in chapter 8 through 12. But now Paul anticipates the question as to why the high priest, having done his part, why those covenant benefits were not yet apparent. His explanation covers two sections, verses 16 through 20, which is a review of the divine ordinances concerning the ratification, the confirming of covenants, and verses 23 to the end of the chapter to show how this is fulfilled before this covenant can be operational. Verse 16 and 17. For where a covenant or testament is, there must also of necessity be the death of the testator. For a testament is of force after men are dead. Otherwise it is of no strength at all while the testator liveth. These verses are a premise understood more by the Jews than by the Gentiles. Here he speaks of the Old Testament arrangement of sealing or ratifying, guaranteeing covenants. Simply stated, covenants were made sure and binding by the death of an animal. This was called the covenant victim. That is the meaning of testator. This had its basis in the covenant made with Abraham, found in Genesis 15, verses 9 and 10, and verses 17 and 18. Also reiterated by Jeremiah 34, verse 18. And also found under Moses, Exodus 24, 3 through 8. It's an important premise. Let me recite those citations. We won't have time to read them. But they're Genesis 15, 9 and 10, and 17 and 18. Jeremiah 34, 18, and Exodus 24, 3 through 8. The Jewish thinking was well oriented to these foundation principles. It was in this context that blood of the covenant was understood by the Jews. As long as the guaranteeing victim remained alive, there could be no covenant. Paul will explain his application, but for now, he continues the analogy of the law covenant blood in verses 18 through 22. We will not read these verses. The point to be noted here is that as concerning the remission of sins, there must always be the shedding of blood. The first covenant he refers to in these verses is the law. And Paul calls to remembrance Exodus 24, 6 through 8, where the people were sprinkled with the blood. We come now to verse 23. It was therefore necessary that the patterns of things in the heavens should be purified with these, that the heavenly things themselves with better sacrifices than these. Paul now comes to his point. If the copies, that is the types, of the heavenly things required animal sacrifices for purification, then the heavenly things themselves, the antitypes, require better sacrifices. And we ask you to note the plural sense of this word, sacrifices. real value was pictured. The sacrifices are certainly those pictured by the bullock and the goat. The merit, of course, lies in the bullock, making that of the goat acceptable. But the goat is no less a sacrifice. Verse 24. For Christ is not entered into the holy places made with hands, which are the figures of the true, but into heaven itself, now to appear in the presence of God for us. This is the antitype of the sprinkling of the blood of the bullock on the mercy seat for his church, his body, not of the people by Moses. This took place when Jesus ascended upon high just before Pentecost. This same merit, when Jesus ascended upon high, when the church is completed and will be beyond the veil, will then be used for the world, as stated in verse 28. Christ first secured remission of sins and acceptance of his body members. It is the only way that we can fill up the afflictions of Christ for his body's sake, Colossians 1:24. It is the only way that our sacrifice is acceptable, Romans 12:1. This is Paul's thought in Hebrews 10:12 and 14. But this man, after he had offered one sacrifice for sins forever, sat down on the right hand of God. For by one offering he hath perfected forever them that are sanctified. His sacrifice is sufficient for our needs and the needs of the whole world. John 1 John 2:2. But first for ours. This is not to say that we are under the same covenant as those who come later. In fact, it is the covenant maker that is sacrificed, not the beneficiary. Christ died to secure two covenants. First, the grace covenant, eventuating in immortality. Second, the new covenant, eventuating in perfect human life. Its promise was to make the comers thereunto perfect. These are the two salvations noted in 2 Timothy 1, verse 10. The way of life is opened to us through his sacrifice. The way of life for the world is opened through our sacrifice of the human nature with our head. Verse 25 and 26 of Hebrews 9. For yet that he should offer himself often, as the high priest entereth into the holy place every year with blood of others, for then must he often have suffered since the foundation of the world. But now, once at the end of the world, hath he appeared to put away sin by the sacrifice of himself. Paul here reasons on the aspect of the frequency of the type offered and of its limited results. However, Christ offered all that he had, once for all. Once at the end of the world, we think the meaning is at the end of the Jewish age. This last phrase is significant. Appeared once to put away sin. Sin. To miss the mark. That perfect standard. To put away sin means to rectify the propensity to miss the mark. This deals more with the sin offering and the kingdom results than with the ransom, which addresses the question of guilt and condemnation, Romans 5, 9 through 18. At the end of the Jewish age, Jesus completes his personal sacrifice and begins the sacrifice of his body as part of the sin offering. One offering with two parts. But here, the two parts of the one sacrifice are shown in this sin offering. And we'd ask you to compare Hebrews 7, verse 27. Who needeth not daily as those high priests to offer up sacrifice, first for his own sins, and then for the people. For this he did once, when he offered up himself. First for his body, then for the people, the bullock, then the goat. But Paul calls it one sacrifice. This is what Paul meant in 1 Corinthians 10:16. The cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion, the common union, the participation of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? The partnership in his blood. It is this blood which seals or secures the new covenant. However, the merit lies in his portion. We do not participate in that ransom merit, except by being recipients of it. First Corinthians 11, 25 and 26. After the same manner also he took the cup when he had supped, saying, "This cup is the New Testament in my blood. This do ye as often as ye drink it in remembrance of me. For often as ye eat this bread and drink this cup, ye do show forth the Lord's death till he come." The cup represents the suffering in the dying process. If he did not drink it, there could be no sharing of that memorial cup. It would be no participation. We believe this sacrifice of himself is an entire gospel age process. First the head, then the body. Therefore, Paul says here in Hebrews 9, verse 27, "And as it is appointed unto men once to die, but after this the judgment." We refer you to Tabernacle Shadows, page 87 through 89, for a complete treatise of this verse. The men are not mankind, but the church, made to be acceptable sacrifices, 1 Peter 2:5. Only these receive the appointment to die. For us, it is an appointment with death. All others receive Adam's condemnation. We reason that one is called to sacrifice only to secure a covenant to follow. This was the basic premise, the rule. Therefore, we are not recipients of the new covenant, but participant, but part of the covenant victim, securing its ratification. A covenant victim cannot receive the benefits of the covenant it guarantees by its death. The same is true of a mediator, he who intervenes between two parties at variance in order to reconcile. He must not have personal vested benefits under the arrangements that he mediates. Both Christ as the antitypical bullock and the church, the antitypical goat, are the covenant victim. They are given for the sake of the covenant. This seems to be the sense of Isaiah 42:6 and Isaiah 49:8-10. Isaiah 49:8. Thus saith the Lord, in an acceptable time have I heard thee, and in a day of salvation have I helped thee, and I will preserve thee and give thee for a covenant of the people, to establish the earth, to cause thee, cause to inherit the desolate heritage, that thou mayest say to the prisoners, go forth, and so forth. This is why Paul says, who hath made us able ministers of the new covenant. 1 Corinthians 3:6. This is why Paul said he was baptized for the dead, for the sake of the dead world. After their death, Christ's head and body, comes the judgment. What judgment? In Leviticus 16, after both sacrifices, or both parts of the sacrifice, had been made, and their blood was taken into the most holy, Aaron changes his garments to the glory garments, Leviticus 16:23. He then offers both rams for a burnt offering. Acceptance was only shown after both parts of the sacrifice were complete, verse 24. It was the smoke of the burnt offering that constituted the judgment for which the whole camp watched and was anxious to see. This confirmed the acceptance of the atonement that was secured, and that the covenant for the ensuing year was sure. Leviticus 16:24. Daniel also speaks of the judgment and the kingdom given to the saints of the Most High. Daniel 7:22-27. So it is here in Hebrews 9, after death the judgment, after the death of the Christ, head and body, the new covenant is secured. Verse 28. So Christ was once offered to bear the sins of many, and unto them that look for him shall he appear the second time without sin unto salvation. The meaning of the Greek is literally without a sin offering unto salvation. Notice this is the second appearing. The first is mentioned in verse 24 and 26. For us, not for the world. The second is to receive the judgment of acceptance of the previous sacrifices and bring salvation to the world under the promised covenant. Those that look for him is the thought of Romans 8:19-23. They are waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. It is at Christ's appearing, but when we are with him to share his work. 1 Peter 4:13. But rejoice inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's suffering, that when his glory shall be revealed, ye may be glad also with exceeding joy. It is important that Paul says this second appearing and work is without a sin offering. His first was to offer his own sacrifice and to guarantee that of his church, his body. The second appearance is with salvation, the sacrifices when all complete and finished. It is then, dear brethren, that the Spirit and the bride will say, come and drink of the water of life freely. The deliverer complete will turn ungodliness from Jacob, and it will be through your mercy that they shall obtain mercy.
Thank you, Brother Jerry. Appreciate that lesson. It's the lesson of the new covenant is quite large to squeeze into 45 minutes. Brother Leslie will lead us in closing prayer.
Our gracious Father in heaven, hallowed be thy most holy name. We reverence thee and praise thee for thy great mercies towards us, the provision of thy dear son's life, his example and counsel and comfort along the way. We earnestly pray for thy kingdom to come and thy will to be done in this weary earth, when all shall know and come to love thee. If it be thy will, Father, let us render thy praise now and forever. Please keep us humble and teachable and bless our continuing fellowship. We ask in Jesus' precious name and merit.